Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
Arsenal have appointed Mikel Arteta as their head coach. What we expected ahead of the weekend, unlikely to be in the dugout tomorrow, but will be in the stands against one of his former clubs that he played for as a player in the form of Everton. Obviously, he's got a big job ahead of him. There's no doubt about it. Obviously, his first head coach position. He's been assistant to Pep Guardiola for the last few years, and from all accounts, has done a terrific job as a coach. But this is a big step up in a very, very difficult job to go into. There's no doubt that the coaching, he may be a very good coach, but managing a club is a completely different prospect. And he's not going into a fantastic club that is really well run, that is doing really, really well. And so the setting is perfect for them. It is difficult to go in, and he has got a lot of things to sort out and a lot of things that Arsenal have to sort out in general. So it is a big, big job ahead for Mikel Arteta, but he is now officially the head coach, unlikely to be in the dugout for Arsenal tomorrow, but will be in the stands at Goodison Park for that game. So obviously a pretty significant moment for Mikel Arteta, his first proper head coaching position, a difficult one for him to turn down, but it most certainly is a pretty difficult job to go into. And as I said, not just going forward over the next few weeks and months, but over the next few years, it's going to be very, very difficult for Arteta. I'm delighted to say, obviously, to give his reaction to this news, to give us the Arsenal perspective on this breaking news that Arteta is the new head coach at Arsenal. I'm delighted to say we're joined by Chris Howard from the Suburban Gooners blog. Thank you very much. At very short notice, Chris. Obviously, we expected this news to come, but obviously that news has now been announced. Your initial reaction to official confirmation now that Arsenal have appointed Mikel Arteta as your new head coach.
Yeah, hello, lads. I think, to be honest with you, I'm just glad that it's done. As usual with Arsenal, we seem to just rumble everything on, whether it's transfers or appointing a new manager or coach or whatever he's going to be. But I think we're just glad that it's happened. Speaking to a lot of mates, and obviously when we do the show on Monday nights, it's just one of those things that we've now just got to get on and see what we can get from him. I'll be completely honest. I was sceptical, and I'm still slightly sceptical because he hasn't managed. But as an Arsenal fan, you just back him and hope that we can get ourselves going northbound on the table.
Obviously, there are a lot of things that he will need to do, a lot of things that he needs to sort out. But initially, obviously, we're not in a window. We will be in a very, very short period of time. But in his first few weeks and months in charge of Arsenal, what are the big kind of couple of things that he needs to sort out with this Arsenal side to turn around their form, which has been terrible of late?
Well, I think first and foremost, buy-in from the players. Like, there's rumblings about, the likes of Aubameyang, and, you've got senior players that are supposedly not too impressed with the appointment. But I seem to recall that the likes of Tony Adams made similar sort of statements, or he's retrospectively made those statements a few years down the line after Arsene Wenger joined. So if I'm being 100% optimistic, I'd probably say that if we can get the same sort of reaction from the players that they gave when Arsene Wenger took hold, then that'll be a positive thing. So I think buying from the players is one thing. I think structure as well, like defensively, our structure is an absolute car crash. And it's not just the defence, it's the guys that operate in front of them, because we don't seem to have a working midfield. We don't seem to have a working central midfield with any kind of discipline. So for me, it's get the structure of the team right. He's got the pedigree in terms of he's just spent X number of years at Man City, get the buy-in from the players. And then if we can string together some wins, then maybe we can get some support in January, because we do need to make some signings.
Obviously, this is Mikel Arteta's first head coach position. As you mentioned, he's been coach under Pep Guardiola at Manchester City for the last few years, so he's been learning off a pretty good manager. obviously, as a player, he didn't just play for Arsenal, but he captained Arsenal. Do you think that he will immediately come in and gain the respect of some of the more experienced players in this Arsenal dressing room because of his exploits when he played for Arsenal? Or do you think there's a risk that because he's not a well-respected manager, and this is his first managerial position, there's a risk that he might not quite garner the respect of the likes of Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang and co?
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest worries, actually. I don't think a lot of the players... I think they look at... The players are quite selfish. They look at their own career. They look at their own situation. And Aubameyang's probably looking at this and saying, well, if someone like Ancelotti comes in as my manager, he's won things. So therefore, you know, am I more likely to be winning things potentially in the next year or two? Arteta obviously hasn't won anything. So I think one of his biggest... That is going to be his biggest challenge, is saying to the guys, look, I know I haven't managed a football team before, but this is the philosophy, this is my idea, and then get the players to buy into it. If you look at Frank Lampard, I know he was at Derby, but moving from Derby to Chelsea is a big move. And so there might have been some players that would have looked at that and said, oh, we're getting a championship manager here. But they've bought into his philosophy because in the first few weeks, he established himself with the players. He's built a rapport with the players. And that's what we need from Arteta now.
Obviously, we don't know whether he's going to be in the dugout tomorrow. It's unlikely he will be ahead of an early kickoff tomorrow. It's against Everton, who themselves are on the verge of appointing a new manager in the form of Carlo Ancelotti. Do you think he will have any significant impact on tomorrow in terms of selection, in terms of tactics? Or is this a game where he's going to sit in the stands, really have an overview of all of Arsenal's players, look at how they set up, and then from the beginning of next week, then start to really implement what he wants to do?
Yeah, I think that's more likely, probably. He'll probably try and do some motivational speaking or maybe some words for the players. Perhaps he would have spoken to them today. But he'll probably take a back seat and observe, because you can't, I mean, officially, he started as in now. You can't really get any kind of judgment on him. He'll know the players, he'll know the style of the team. But he can't make any major judgments, I don't think, just yet. So I suspect he'll be very hands-off for tomorrow's game. And the hope, I suppose, from his perspective, is probably just by having a new manager in the stands and someone to impress, those Arsenal players have got a point to prove.
Love Sport.
Welcome back to the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. We're going to be talking all things Manchester United now, and I'm delighted to say we're joined by Dominic Booth from the Manchester Evening News. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Dominic. Before we talk about matters on the field, a few transfer-related stories today. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer had his press conference this morning. One in and one out, he was asked about. Let's start with a potential incoming at Manchester United in the form of Erling Haaland from Salzburg. Now, there were some reports suggesting he was on a flight to Manchester. Then other reports suggesting he was going on holiday to Copenhagen. Solskjaer didn't really give much away. He didn't seem to suggest he was going to have talks with Haaland today. How likely, or you look at the odds, Manchester United are favourites to sign him. How would you rate United's chances of getting a deal for Haaland done in January?
Afternoon, Kieran. I think it's a good chance. I think, obviously, what the elephant in the room is in this situation is Solskjaer has worked with Haaland before at Molde in Norway. And obviously his record since being at RB Salzburg is sensational, more than a goal per game this season. So if it's the bill in terms of what United want, in terms of a traditional number nine, they've sort of been shuffling around the deck chairs a little bit in regards to that position this season. And I think, yeah, it does, from the information I have, it sounds like there's a good chance of this one going through.
Solskjaer was also asked about a potential departure this morning, and that is the former Paul Pogba, who hasn't played since September due to injury. He's now out with this mystery illness, despite being at his brother's wedding not that long ago, just a week ago. Solskjaer said there's no chance he will leave in January, although there are some reports suggesting some in the United camp believe he's played his final game for Manchester United. What have you heard on this one? Are you thinking, Pogba, there's no chance United will entertain anything in January, or do you think that they might be open to doing business?
I'm inclined to believe Solskjaer and what the club say on this one, because it simply doesn't make sense to let poor Pogba go in January when he's going to be incredibly difficult to replace. And they must replace him because the midfield numbers are thin, as it stands, even with Paul Pogba in the squad. So United would be foolish to let themselves get in such a predicament. I mean, there were some people who are angry that they didn't replace Ander Herrera in terms of midfield players in the summer when he left. And Nemanja Matic looks like he's edging closer to a departure as well. So the midfield really would be stretched if all of those and Pogba leave the club. So I just think it's common sense on this one that United will stand firm for now, although obviously with Pogba's contract situation expiring in about 18 months' time, I think we're probably looking at a summer departure.
In regards to matters back on the field, in the week, United won 3-0 at home against Colchester United in the Carabao Cup quarterfinals, which sets up an all-Manchester derby in the semi-finals across two legs against Manchester City at the beginning and the end of January. We spoke to a City guest yesterday saying a lot of the City fans wanted this tie. They wanted a bit of revenge on Manchester United. How are United fans seeing this one? Are they thinking that they've just beaten City at the Etihad? There's confidence playing against this Manchester City side, or were Manchester City the least kind of favourite option for the semi-final?
I think you only have to look at the quality of Manchester City squad, regardless of whether it's a derby or not, to know you wouldn't want to face them until as late in the competition as possible. And I think that was the thinking of United, who are very keen to go all the way in this competition to try and get themselves some confidence. You know, the prestige of winning a trophy for a very young squad would be, you know, hugely helpful. And City is the last team you want just because they're such a good side. I don't really care about their form. You know, they've got a great manager, they've got some world-class players. And regardless of the fact that United deservedly beat them a couple of weeks ago, it's a tough tie for Solskjaer.
How important do you think Manchester United view this League Cup? Because when Jose Mourinho took over, and whenever he's taken over at clubs, he believed in the importance of winning a trophy early in your tenure, that once you get that first trophy over the line, it then makes winning other trophies not easy, but easier. So for Solskjaer, how massive could a League Cup victory mean to him? Or is it to a lot of people in English football now that don't really kind of put a massive priority in the League Cup? Is it just a case of from within United it would be seen as important, or do you reckon the kind of the wider media would view this as an important stepping stone for Solskjaer?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think the wider media may give Solskjaer a little bit more slack if he's got a trophy to his name. I think at the moment he's known a little bit too often for being relegated with Cardiff and for winning the Norwegian League, which is no great prestige in the eyes of the English media. So I think for that reason, Solskjaer would be very, very keen to go all the way if he can against City and then into the final. It's obviously, it would be an important trophy in terms of where United are at the moment, because they've obviously got no chance of winning the league. They're not in the Champions League. So really looking at one of the cup competitions or the Europa League as a possible trophy, and all three of those obviously still available at the moment, and Solskjaer would love one to just send a message to his squad that, look, you are capable of going all the way and winning things.
You mentioned the Europa League there, Dominic. Obviously, earlier in the week, in the last 32 draw, United were drawn alongside Club Brugge, who dropped down from the Champions League from Paris Saint-Germain and Real Madrid's group along with Galatasaray. How are United perceiving that tie? Are they thinking this could be a trickier tie than maybe they were expecting for the last 32 of the Europa League?
I don't think it's an easy tie, but I think there were more difficult ties that United could have drawn out when you look at a team like Roma, who I think were in the non-seeded group who United could have faced. Don't think they would have fancied that, but I think Bruges obviously is favourable in terms of it's not too much travelling when you've got a midweek fixture. You know, United have been playing Thursday, Sunday quite a lot this season and will continue to do so. I think it's more a favourable tie than anything else.
In the Premier League this weekend then for Manchester United, they make the trip to Vicarage Road on Sunday afternoon. They're playing against Watford. Now, Watford showed a spirited display against tabletoppers Liverpool last weekend. If they were more clinical, then the result could have been different last weekend. So do you think Solskjaer will be looking at this game and thinking that it is a trickier task, a tougher game than maybe you'd have expected for a side that have only won one Premier League game all season?
Yeah, I think it's a really dangerous game for United. We've seen time and time again how they struggle to break down resolute, disciplined defences. Well, that's probably what we expect Nigel Pearson to do with Watford. I think they defended very well against Liverpool last week and probably would have won the game if they could have finished any of their chances off. So, yeah, I wouldn't pay any attention to Watford's league position. I would urge caution when United fans are, you know, going to the bookmakers, the back their team to win this one. I think it would be a really, really tough game and it could go either way.
Obviously, in games actually that Manchester United have been doing better in this season has been against the better sides, where they've been able to play on the counter-attack and using the pace of Marcus Rashford, of Anthony Martial, of Daniel James. These types of games, though, they're not going to be able to do that because United will have more possession. When they play away at City, United know they're going to be able to play on the counter-attack because that's the natural way the game is going to go. That's not going to happen on Sunday. So what are Manchester United going to have to do in terms of adapting their tactical approach to this game, knowing that they're not going to be able to play on the counter-attack for the whole 90 minutes?
Well, it comes back to what we said when we were talking about Paul Pogba. They need a player of that calibre in midfield who can pass the ball, who can create chances, who's got that bit of flair to go past defenders. That's what they need to unlock these teams. And there's no surprise to see United interested in a player like James Maddison, who would obviously be able to do that in the number 10 position. United really have a weakness there. Jesse Lingard's played there. He's played well occasionally. Andreas Pereira's been quite inconsistent whenever he's played. So United need to devise a way of getting a player in that position who can unlock defences. Whether you drop a Rashford into there and let him play behind a striker or something like that, they need to come up with something different because at the moment, like you say, they're very well set up for the counter-attack against teams who dominate possession, but they struggle and they labour when they're asked to break teams down.
So finally, Dominic, in a game like this where United are expected to win this game, do you think this is the type of game that United could slip up in?
Yeah, I do. I'm very concerned about that, but I think United is necessity now for United. They know, the players know that they're definitely more capable than some were suggesting earlier in the season. They've got those big results to back that up. Now they need to just go on a consistent run. They've got Watford, then Newcastle, then Burnley, all before the year is out. Three wins in those kind of games would really set a precedent and show everyone that United can beat all types of teams, and not just the big teams.
This is Love Sport.
We're going to be turning our attention to all things Tottenham now, and I'm delighted to say we are joined by Martin Bahagia, board member of the Spurs Supporters Trust. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Martin. A bit of breaking news this morning from a Tottenham perspective, and it's the news that Toby Alderweireld, one of the players that was out of contract at the end of the season, when Mauricio Pochettino was in charge, it seemed unlikely he was going to sign a new contract. Well, Jose's replaced Pochettino, and Alderweireld signed a new contract until 2023, so a three-year extension on his contract. How do you look at that, and how will Pochettino be feeling today that Mourinho's gone in and he signed that new contract when he wasn't willing to do so when Poch was in charge?
Yeah, it's a weird one, because there was a feeling, I know I've been on your show and said before, that players like Jan, Toby Alderweireld, Christian Eriksen just weren't doing it for the manager, and the difference in Jan Vertonghen and Toby Alderweireld in the last few weeks has been astonishing. You know, that's one of the reasons I think we're looking more solid as well, is just the fact that they seem to be performing under the new manager. So I don't know what's gone on there. It's very strange. But yeah, as you say, it was apparent, it was clear that Toby was not going to be signing that new contract under Pochettino. So we can only assume that something had gone on there. It's also worth mentioning, one of my colleagues made the point that was it also that perhaps the club weren't offering Alderweireld what he wanted to earn while Pochettino was there? Has there been perhaps a shift in what the club have agreed to pay him? So I don't know if this contract offer has been on the table for a number of months, or if they've upped it to what the player actually wanted. So there's a few questions I guess we'd need to ask, but it's certainly a bizarre one. And I guess if you're Mauricio Pochettino, you're probably sitting there thinking, well, I wish all these contract issues were sorted out in the summer and maybe it'd still be in a job. You just don't know.
As you mentioned there, Martin, we don't know the ins and outs of exactly how these negotiations have developed and what might have changed. And obviously, you will be happy that a quality centre-back in Alderweireld is staying. He's still one of the top centre-backs in the Premier League, so you will be happy that he stays. But is it not a bit of a worry that he... Obviously, that's, I suppose, the impact that Jose Mourinho has made coming in, that he has convinced players like Alderweireld to sign a new contract now, but that seemingly they're playing for a manager rather than a club, that he wasn't willing to stay at Tottenham irrelevant of who was at the helm. Are you a bit worried that just because Poch has been replaced by Jose, that's the only reason why he's decided to stay?
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously saying that he loves the club. He didn't want to go anywhere. You know, you get all the cliches, don't you? And most of our supporters, I think, are happy that he's staying. But yeah, I felt quite let down by some of our players from August to sort of October, November, when we were underperforming under Pochettino. And, you know, and he was one of them, you know, as were some of the other players in contract disputes. So, yeah, it's hard to go into too much detail about knowing what's gone on. It's a weird one, but you'd hope that, you know, whatever's gone on with managers, that players are committed, as you say, to the club. That's the one thing you'd expect. That's what fans are. Fans are completely committed to the club. And as much as we love certain managers, and, you know, fans might not like managers at certain points in club's history, they're always committed to the football club, and they expect to see that from the players when they're earning such huge sums of money. So it's a strange one. It's a positive one. It's great to have him signed for, you know, for another 4 years. He's a great centre-back, and we're delighted that the club managed to do that, and he's playing well. But, yeah, and no doubt the fact that the club have signed Jose Mourinho, and maybe, you know, you all of a sudden you hear other players, even someone like Gareth Bale was talking about how positive it was that we'd brought Jose Mourinho to the club. And it just seems that, yeah, it just maybe has changed certain players' minds within the club as to whether or not they were going to move on or not.
On Monday of this week, Martin, the Champions League last 16 draw took place, and Tottenham, considering the teams they could have faced, it was seen as the easiest draw they could have got, and it was against RB Leipzig. Now, they are top of the Bundesliga. What's, I suppose, intriguing about the Champions League draw is that these ties don't take place for another couple of months, so things can completely change for both clubs. Looking at that, I'm assuming you were a bit relieved that you did miss out on some of the massive European giants that you've missed out on. When you look at Leipzig, do you think this is a side that could trouble Tottenham, or are you thinking, actually, this is exactly what Tottenham fans were after?
It's a draw, you know. If you'd asked me before the draw, which teams did you want? They would have been one of them, along with probably Valencia. But that's not to say you can take them lightly, just because they're a very, very good team. They've won their group. They're top of the Bundesliga. You know, we've seen how good Bayern Munich were when we played them. So we've got to be careful. I think it's one of those potential banana skins. A lot of people were saying, when the draw was made, you know, typical sort of social media comments of Spurs have got to buy. And it's that, you know, I don't think any Spurs fans believe in that at all. It's going to be a hard game. You're not top of the Bundesliga in December by luck. You're obviously a good team to be leading that division. So it's a tricky one. However, yeah, you look at it and you think, well, the way we're playing at the moment, you fancy us to beat Leipzig and to progress. So, you know, we're confident, we're on the up. It's a kind draw, but I'm sure Mourinho will be saying to the boys, we cannot take this lightly, and I wouldn't expect them to. I'd imagine it would be a tough test. You don't get any easy games in the knockout stages of the Champions League, really, do you? So we'll have to be aware, but it's nice to have something, a game like that, to look forward to.
I'm guessing, Martin, you'd have seen this week Daniel Levy's been doing an exclusive interview with The Standard. And one of the big talking points from this interview was surrounding the future of Christian Eriksen. We talked about Toby Alderweireld, who was one of the players out of contract. He's now signed a new contract. Eriksen is out of contract at the end of the season. He's been linked with moves to both Madrid clubs. He's been linked with a move to Manchester United. Interestingly, Daniel Levy said that the club are not scared of selling Eriksen to another Premier League club. When you read that, are you thinking that would be absolute suicide to allow, even if Eriksen's not in good form at all at the moment, it would be an absolutely horrible mistake to sell him to a fellow Premier League club?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, absolutely. I'd like to see him go abroad. I don't think there's much appetite from the club to keep him, to be honest. I don't think there's a lot of support to keep him in the stands either. So I guess we're looking at him going. I don't think he'll do what Toby's done. I think he probably might feel that he's burned his bridges with a few fans anyway. So we expect to see him move on. I wouldn't like to see him go and strengthen Manchester United, because obviously when he is in form, if he gets that form back, he's a very good player. And if he started to discover that form for us, I'm sure people would change their minds. He got an assist against Wolves and he came on. He certainly looks to be in a better place mentally when he does play at the moment. It's probably the same reason as Toby, perhaps. But I think, reading between the lines, that wouldn't surprise me if that was Daniel Levy saying to Real Madrid, if you want Christian Eriksen or Juventus, you're going to have to pay the money. We're not going to let him go on the cheap. You're going to have to pay the amount we want. And there are English clubs interested in him, and we're not we're not scared of selling to them. It wouldn't surprise me if that's what that was, maybe a coded message to some European teams. If you want him, you're still going to have to pay money. And there's obviously been rumours that we're going to try and move for Bale. And with Eriksen, I don't know how true that would be. I think I'd be a mammoth deal to try and get that over the line as a player swap. His future certainly looks like it's going to be elsewhere. I personally think if it can happen at Christmas, that would suit everyone. The team seems to be playing very well, as a lot of fans wanted, with Dele Alli behind Kane and Son and Moore outside. And I can see us trying to strengthen in those departments. And I quite welcome Mourinho's stance on this by not playing Eriksen. You know, he's been nice, he's been kind to the players, he won't break the confidence of what's been said. But I know he said before he joined Spurs, he said at previous clubs, if I've got a player who doesn't want to play for the club, then I'm always looking to the future. I probably won't play them. And that's what he's done. And I think that's what we needed. Because when he did play regularly, I think he was way below standard. And as a result, we look a far better attacking threat now with those three players in behind Kane.
Back to matters on the field, and a rather significant game for both fans like you of Tottenham and fans of Chelsea. It is Tottenham against Chelsea on Sunday afternoon at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Jose Mourinho obviously managing against one of his former sides. Now, the times have changed over the last 4 or 5 weeks. Chelsea have lost a number of games over the last months, which means going into the game, Tottenham could go above Chelsea with a win into the top four on goal difference. Looking at this, how do you see this one playing out? Because both sides are in different form at the moment.
Yeah, I think at home we've looked really good under Jose. I think the Burnley game was really impressive, and Burnley aren't no slouches, and we absolutely ripped them to shreds. And hopefully we were quite resilient against Wolves. So I think the more time we spend on the training field with Mourinho, the more they'll start to improve that back four and the positioning and the problems we've had. It's a massive game. I think I fancy us to win. I just feel that we've got the momentum now. And I think Chelsea, with younger players, they may be lacking a bit of inexperience. So they remind me of us a few years ago, actually, when you have that kind of dip in form with younger players. It does take a while to recover, because confidence can be such an issue for the younger guys. So I think if we can seize the initiative, press early, I think if we start the game the way we started against Wolves and Burnley, where we started really quickly and we looked really dangerous early on, then a good early goal would be very welcome. They're going to look to hit us on the break. They're very quick. They've got some very quick and experienced players as well. They're not just young guys. But I just think we might have a bit too much of them going forward. I think when I've seen them play at the back, they've done all right. But I think with the way Kane, Alli, Lucas Moura and Son are playing, I expect us to create chances. And so I'm going for a 3-1 win, I think. We'll see. But famous last words.
Love Sport.
Welcome back to the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. We're going to be talking all things Burnley now. And I'm delighted to say we're joined by Joe Redmond from the Turfcast podcast. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Joe. Let's look back then at last weekend's game. It was a 1-0 win at home for Burnley against Newcastle. It ended a run of three straight defeats. There were some contentious issues as to whether, for example, Andy Carroll should have been sent off. It looked like there may have been an argument to say that after elbowing Ben Mee. It wasn't necessarily the greatest game of football aesthetically, but I'm guessing for Burnley fans like yourself, Joe, it must have been a really crucial result after a bit of a poor run.
Yeah, I think that was it. It's just the fact of getting the win. Obviously, we've lost a couple of games quite comprehensively as well in that three straight defeat run, obviously against Man City and Tottenham. So you can understand why we're losing against them sort of sides. But I think I said on one of the shows previously, it was just the way that we were losing was a worry. But we got back to what we're known to be strong at the back, no nonsense. And thankfully, we got a scrappy win. You hit the nail on the head. It wasn't the best game to watch at all. And nearly fell asleep by half time. It was very, very poor. But yeah, we got the win, and that's all that matters now.
You mentioned there, Joe, about going back to what Burnley do so well. And it's been apparent at times this season that, in particular against the bigger clubs, the game at home against Chelsea that Burnley lost 4-2, where they were 4-0 down, away at Tottenham a few weeks ago, where they lost 5-0, that Burnley were trying to Maybe, I don't know whether it was to do with kind of media pressure of saying, oh, Sean Dyche's football isn't exactly great to watch. They were trying to be a bit more expansive, trying to play out a bit more, and it just completely backfired on them. So do you think there may have been a little bit of case of Sean Dyche wanting to dispel the theory that they just play kind of boring and inverted commas football? And do you think it's imperative that with the squad that Burnley currently have, that they do, they stick to what they're good at? And it may not be great to watch, but on the whole, Burnley do a good job at it.
Yeah, 100%. I think that scenario sort of like fits more last season rather than early this season. I think we got off to a decent start this season, but yeah, you have mentioned the games against the likes of Chelsea and Tottenham and stuff. I think it's more a case of we should show them too much respect. We don't do what we're good at against them sort of teams. We don't get in their faces. And half of the time, for example, he might even play 4-5-1. So then we sort of like take that threat of Ashley Barnes off and it'll be Chris Wood up top. And then we haven't got a striker bullying their defences. And then when the ball goes up top, it doesn't stick. Then we can't get 30, 40 yards up the pitch. Because when Wood is up top on his own, 9 times out of 10, he ain't getting anywhere near it. It's just coming back. So I think for the top six sides, I think I saw a stat recently, actually. I'm not sure how true it were. It was on Twitter. And we know how Twitter can be. It's, I think we're the only side this season to not take a single point off one of the top six teams. And that just sums us up perfectly against the top six. And we've got Man United soon, just after Christmas. And a lot of Burnley fans are saying, well, Man United aren't the side they used to be. We could get a point. Whereas my argument is, we show all these sides too much respect and we'll probably stand off and we'll probably get beat comfortably. So hopefully we can put that to bed against Man United.
Obviously, we get to this point, it is the 20th of December, and a lot of people are talking about January and transfers, and inevitably, yeah, kind of all clubs are starting to be linked with players. I want to get your views on a couple of links. Firstly, or that actually were both players down in the Championship. One is Stoke and Wales midfielder Joe Allen, who's been linked with a move to Burnley. There's a bit of uncertainty surrounding whether Danny Drinkwater is going to continue on loan at Burnley for the rest of the season. When you look at Joe Allen, he's obviously playing for a side that's struggled so far this season in Stoke. Would you think that would be a decent signing if it were to happen in January?
I think it would be a decent signing just simply because it would give competition for places in central midfield. We don't have that at the minute, and Ashley Westwood missed a couple of games recently, and you could see how much we missed him. If we had somebody that could come in and do a job, because at the minute it is just Jack Corker and Ashley Westwood. Yeah, we have Danny Drinkwater as well, but he spent the majority of his time here not playing, and all the noises coming out of the club now would suggest that it could be off in January. So if we can get someone who is going to provide competition for places and when called upon can do a decent enough job, then yeah, I'd welcome that. We definitely need another central midfielder. It's a place we've been lacking for several years, and every single transfer window, Burnley fans are always saying, like, get a central midfielder in, and we never do. We'll just buy another central defender for some reason. But yeah, central midfield is definitely a point where I'd like us to strengthen.
Another Championship player linked with a move to Burnley over the last few days is the Charlton forward Conor Gallagher, who really stepped up in Lyle Taylor's absence along with Macaulay Bonn. When we've spoken to some Charlton fans, they've been waxing lyrical about Conor Gallagher, saying this kid has got a lot of talent. I'm sure if that is the case, Burnley won't be the only club looking at him. Is that the sort of signing, an exciting young signing, alongside the likes of Dwight McNeil, who's been a revelation over the last 18 months as a young player for Burnley? Do you reckon that's the type of signing that can really kind of excite Burnley fans and start moving you on, and you would be able to play a slightly different style if you started to bring in players like Conor Gallagher?
I'm not sure about that. Definitely, we could play a different style if we wanted to, but that sort of signing is the sort of signing that pretty much every club wants. You want a young and exciting player who's going to get you off your seats and onto your feet. Every single club will want that sort of player, so of course we want that sort of player. I don't know too much about him, to be honest, other than that I know Charlotte fans have been absolutely, like you say, waxing lyrical about him. I saw the link come up in the last couple of days. I've searched him myself. I don't know, he's been doing really, really well down in the Championship for Charlton. I've read that there is somewhere something in the loan deal with Chelsea that they can recall him. So if we do want to get him, if we do express an interest in Chelsea and that progresses, then Chelsea can then recall him and we could progress that. But fingers crossed, it is definitely the sort of signing that we'd be lucky to get, definitely. But he is under 30, so it's probably not likely to happen.
Matters then back on the field, Joe. This weekend, Burnley take on a side that also ended a poor run in Bournemouth, and maybe not the most ideal time to be travelling to the South Coast to take on Bournemouth, even though they do have a few injuries. Burnley might have a few injuries to contend with. Chris Wood could be a doubt. Ashley Westwood, you mentioned there, has missed games recently. He's also a doubt for the game. Do you think after Bournemouth's performance and result at Chelsea last weekend, does this look like a tougher game and perhaps made even slightly tougher by missing some of those first team players?
if we're missing Ashley Westwood and Chris Wood, then yeah, we will struggle. We'll struggle massively against anybody. Never mind like a team that play the way the Bournemouth do. But we do have a good head-to-head record against Bournemouth, and I always argue that their style of play sort of like fits exactly into our hands, and our style of play they can't handle. But Chris Wood is vital to that. So if Chris Wood is missing, we can't really do the style that we normally do. We'll probably go 4-5-1 or maybe stick Jay up top. And Jay's not got that presence that Chris Wood can have. So it is vital that them two are in the squad for us. But it's looking like it's going to be the battle of the walking wounded, as you say, because Bournemouth have got quite a lot of injuries as well. So it could end up being a 0-0, I think, if all these players are out.
This is Love Sport.
I'm joined in the studio, as per usual, by the presenter on Posh Boys and Love Sport Drive, Johnny Burrow. But obviously with the added story, with the fact that his club has appointed a new manager, or head coach actually should be the position that we give him. It's Mikel Arteta, 3.5-year contract. Johnny, thoughts?
Are we hedging already with the head coach thing? He doesn't do the transfers. If we're rubbish, it's not his fault. Listen, I've got my doubts. I absolutely have my doubts. I know Martin Allen has his doubts. We're going to be going into that throughout the show. The one thing I don't get is the people who are close to the club, the former players, Kanu was the latest, coming out sort of today and criticising the appointment at a point where it was, okay, it hadn't been announced, but it's already inevitable. How is that constructive? If what you're saying is, I really care about this football club, I want this football club to succeed, at the point where they have quite clearly made a decision, surely, even if we've got our doubts, you kind of have to back Arteta now.
I think it's clear that a lot of the fans will get behind him. He's a former player. He's a former captain at Arsenal. But I suppose one of the big questions, will the senior players at Arsenal back him? Because, I mean, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang's brother has made it. Well, whether Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang's actually said these things or whether it's just for the media. Do you think, obviously, he was a former captain there, but he's never been a head coach before. He's never been a manager, so he hasn't won a whole host of trophies, and therefore his kind of reputation kind of precedes himself. Do you think he's going to gain the respect of the players immediately?
Well, let me answer a question with a question. Who was the better footballer? Who was the more well-known footballer? Who was the richer footballer, Mikel Arteta or Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang?
What's the answer?
Aubameyang. Quite clearly, yep. Aubameyang is the world star, the one who played at Dortmund, who scored goals in the Champions League, scored goals everywhere he went. And it's quickly becoming apparent that as well as being a lethal centre-forward, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang is also an absolutely lethal bloke. He's causing trouble. He doesn't want to be there. I don't believe for a second that he's going to go, oh, that Mikel Arteta, what a good tactician. You know that drill he did earlier where we passed the ball and then we went round the cone and we came back? He's my guy. He's got an ego on him. He's getting towards the wrong side of 30. He wants a move. He wants more money. Fine. Let him go. If that's what we're doing, if we're playing ego, if we're playing divas, go be a diva, and go be a diva in China or in Manchester or wherever else. Mikel Arteta will get a response out of those youngsters. And what he's really rated for, what he's credited with doing at City, for example, is improving Raheem Sterling. And that, I think, is going to have to be the focus of this Arsenal era, if you like. It's taking players like Gabriel Martinelli, taking players like Bukayo Saka, and going, right, let's turn them into the stars rather than throwing money at Aubameyang, because it's not going to work.
So, obviously, as you mentioned, Aubameyang's a better player than Arteta ever was. Aubameyang's one of the most lethal goal scorers in Premier League football. Are you saying then if it had been... Now, I know Thierry Henry has taken up managerial positions and failed, but if this had been Thierry Henry's first job, let's say he hadn't managed anyone before and he was the man appointed because he was one of the best foreign imports we've ever had in the Premier League, that it would be a different story?
I think it would be a slightly different story. I mean, Henry is in a class of his own in that context because we know that Aubameyang grew up loving watching Henry play. So I think Henry is kind of in a separate bracket. Let's take a Patrick Vieira. Patrick Vieira could come in, having been Mikel Arteta before Mikel Arteta. He was the manager, head coach at New York City FC, where he was highly rated, talked up for the City job, talked up for the Arsenal job. He's gone to Nice. He's not set the world alight, but, you know, he's doing okay. I don't think Aubameyang would turn around for him because Aubameyang wants a move. Aubameyang has realised he's not going to win a trophy or the kind of trophy he wants at Arsenal in the next 2 years. So he wants to go. And if he wants to go, it's modern football. Just let him.
Love Sport.